On this episode of The Checkdown, we talk about UW's opener against Auburn, run through the AP preseason top 25 and All-Americans, and we discuss what constitutes a successful season for the top Pac-12 schools. We then have a special interview with Tony Castricone, the voice of the Huskies. He gives some great insight into UW's program, Jake Browning, Chris Peterson, and even answers some of our social debate questions. Just so you might want to listen to what he thinks about peanut butter and jelly. We then break down the FedEx Cup and the Blitz package heats up, as normal, as we discuss the top dance songs of all time and sunburns. But first, here's your jam of the week. This is Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock with It Takes Two. Kyle, welcome back. We had ourselves a pretty epic weekend. We were in Palm Springs. Got to play a couple rounds of golf at the JW Marriott. The Palm in the Valley course. It was a good time. It was hotter than hell, but it was a good time.
It was just as much of a challenge as it was a good time.
Yes.
It was an absolute physical and mental battle.
Yeah, it was a grind.
Especially the last 2 hours.
There was a stretch from like hole 8 to about 14 where our foursome, we didn't know if we were going to make it. We couldn't find water. We couldn't find shade. Literally, we were dying. But we did. We survived. We persevered. And it was a good time. The courses were beautiful, too. I had never played there.
When we were driving in that non-shaded section, I was looking for small animals that were possible meals in case of a survival situation. I was like, what could be shelter?
Yep.
What could be a meal? What waters, if I drink that water in the pond, will I get dysentery or will it be okay?
We were about to jump in the pond, that's for damn sure. Because it was like 113 for the large majority of the second round.
It was brutal. I played better the second round. You shot a better score in the first round.
Yeah, I did. Right? Yes. I shot an 87 the first round and an 89 the second round. Not bad.
No, not bad at all.
I would have shot better in the second round, too, if I wasn't hacking away in the sand on that one hole.
Oh, I know. That's such a bummer.
Oh, it's all good, though. It was a good time. Thanks to George. Got us the rounds at the JW Marriott. That was a lot of fun. And as was Doug, our personal golf instructor, who works at the JW Marriott.
I've never had a starter be so thorough in my golf career.
Me neither.
He actually insisted that we walk to the – no, he didn't insist. He forced us to walk to the green with him.
Yep.
So he could show us how to putt up and down the tiers because there are tiered greens on the golf course.
Yep.
And he wouldn't let us go to the tee without bug spray.
He made us spray it, but not directly on our face, in your hand, and then wipe it on your cheeks, apparently, is the correct way to apply bug spray.
Apparently. If you are going to deny him the use of his bug spray, you had to physically show him your own bug spray.
Right. He had to give it the check. He had to check it off. Yeah, that is legal. That is allowed. Go right ahead.
It was like a bouncer at like one of the most strict bars I've ever been to. It was like, no, dude, like just let me go. I swear I'm 21. Get out of my face.
Oh, man. It was a lot of fun, though. It was fun, too, because we got to play around the pool. And there was like massive pool parties going on at the resort. And so there was about 4 or 5 holes where you could just hear some music blasting, which was pretty awesome.
It was awesome, but there was the little piece of jealousy there.
Yeah, because we were in 113 on our second round. Oh, we didn't even explain that. So we teed off at 7:30. We were done right around 11:45, maybe. Grabbed lunch from 12 to 1. Teed off again at 1:15. 36 in one day. Some would call us crazy. Others would call us stupid. But either way, it was not a good decision. But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, people at the course actually called us crazy.
They did.
You guys are going back out? You guys are crazy. I was like, well, you know. Yeah, it's free. We got the hookup, so we're gonna take advantage of
Yeah,
it.
we're gonna go. We got to. Honestly, that was a good time. Great rounds of golf, but you know who is not having good rounds right now? Urban Meyer. Suspended for the first three games. I know you have the update, the article on that. What do you got for us? Literally just came out about, what, an hour ago?
Yeah, an hour ago. So, reading from USA Today, Ohio State suspended its national championship football coach, Urban Meyer, for three games after the school investigated his handling of allegations of domestic abuse involving one of his former assistant coaches. The announcement comes after the school's board of trustees appointed an independent panel to oversee a 2-week investigation of Meyer and what he knew about domestic abuse allegations against former wide receivers coach Zach Smith. The board reviewed the report and discussed its actions for nearly 11 hours on Wednesday. So Meyer, who will miss the games against Oregon State, Rutgers, and TCU at TCU, is suspended without pay, which, womp womp, he could care less. He has been on paid leave since August 1st. So I don't want to say it's really dropping the hammer. Something had to happen. He's got to be punished in some way. I don't know. I don't know that this, I feel like this satisfies the court of public opinion. But as far as actually punishing the program, I don't think it does a whole lot.
No, I don't think so either. And the other problem is too is they didn't, I mean, they haven't yet, but maybe they will get to that tomorrow. They haven't released any of the details of what they actually found in the investigation. Like, did he report it to his higher ups, or did he just try to do personal counseling with them? So, once that stuff kind of leaks out and they can actually look at the behaviors of what he did and what the guys above him did or didn't do, I feel like then people can have a better judgment on if the punishment matches the crime.
So one of the items here in the middle of the report, according to the report, although neither Urban Meyer nor Gene Smith condoned or covered up the alleged domestic abuse by Zach Smith, they failed to take sufficient management action related to Zach Smith's misconduct and retained an assistant coach who was not performing as an appropriate role model for OSU student athletes. Permitting such misconduct to continue is not consistent with the values of the university. Oh my gosh. I hate that politically correct nonsense.
So still not really clear on what happened and didn't happen.
No,
Didn't
not
condo
really.
yeah.
I'm going to publish an article. It's going to be between 500 and 1,000 words, and it's going to say nothing.
Yeah,
And I'm going to
basically.
copy it from some other guy that got in trouble somewhere else at some other program. And everybody's gonna be like, oh, yeah, he apologized. He said the right thing. Jeez.
We'll just have to wait and see. More will come out, that's for sure. And we'll keep tabs on it. But like you said, I think it doesn't necessarily punish the program, especially because they'll walk over their opponents in the first two games, and TCU might be tough at TCU, but other than that, I mean, he'll still be watching film. He'll still break down stuff with the coaches, most likely at home or wherever he's going to do it, but not really going to stop them from probably having a shot at the Big Ten. Anywho, so I wrote my first article.
Yes.
I published it.
Well done, sir. Well
Thank you.
done.
For those of you who didn't read it, you can go to the checkdownpodcast.com or tonycrocorian.com. It's the only article up right now because we're just getting into the writing game. But basically, and we've talked a little bit about it, but I wanted to just expand on it. Why the Washington Auburn game is so important, not just for Washington, but for the whole Pac-12. And I really do think that the whole identity of the Pac-12 hinges on how Washington plays against Auburn. Do they have to win? I don't think necessarily. I do think a one-loss Pac-12 champion can still get in the playoffs, but if they get blown out, I think it's over, realistically. I mean, because
Unless somebody goes undefeated.
unless somebody goes undefeated, right? But I think a close loss or a win sets the tone for the Pac-12 to where now, because Washington won, a win against a top team in the SEC helps everybody in the Pac-12.
I just don't trust him, Tony. I don't want the reputation, at least for this season of the Pac-12, to be on the Husky shoulders. I don't trust
I know.
Jake Browning. I don't trust that program. I feel like I know they're good.
I
I
know.
do. I just don't know that they're the powerhouse that SC used to be, or that even Stanford has been, here or there, that Oregon was under Chip Kelly. They're not that team
Right.
that can really make a difference, I don't think. And I could be proven wrong, absolutely, but
Yeah.
makes me nervous.
No, I mean, and I think that's been the MO of the Pac-12, right? Is there's always been one or two favorites to win from each division, but like we're not really sure how good they are on a national stage. And I feel like that's where we're at again this year. Like Washington is very, very good, but we don't know how good yet because the Pac-12 was kind of up and down last year. So I think what I did write about, I don't want to, I mean, I'll give it all away actually. So I'm picking Washington to win, one, because it's a Pac-12 podcast, but two, because I do think that they have a lot of things at their disposal that can help them beat Auburn. First, experience. They bring a ton of guys back, 6 fourth-year starters, 16 overall returners, 9 of which on a defense that was top in the country last year. And they have their secondary is, first or second secondary in the country. So I think experience and talent-wise on the defensive side of the ball, they're really good, and I think they're going to be ready. Offensively, obviously, Jake Browning and Myles Gaskin are both seniors, 4-year guys that have played for a long time. Kind of the other questions around wide receivers and offensive line will hopefully get figured out before the game. But I do think they have a shot, and I love Chris Peterson. I do. I think he's a really, really good coach, and I think he game plans well and he adjusts well, and he's not afraid to take big time chances on special teams or with trick plays. And I think that's huge. I think that could be huge in the first game when teams are still trying to find their identity, trying to, young kids playing in big games, and he pulls a fast one that can be a, field position change or a go for a touchdown or something like that. So I think there's something sneaky up his sleeve, and I think they're going to pull it out.
It's in Atlanta, right?
It's in Atlanta, which is technically kind of a home game for Auburn, only like 200 miles for them.
That's a long way to travel for the Huskies.
Yeah, long way. But they'll play in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which will be awesome. Do you think Washington can win, though?
I do. I think they can win. I think that the first game of any college football season is it's never easily predictable.
Right.
I think there's if you're going to sit here and say I'm going to bet my entire life savings and my 401k on the first game of any college football season, no matter who it is, whether it's Alabama or USC or Ohio State, I mean, it's just tough. It'd probably be easy for Alabama most years because they play high school teams, game one. But you just never know. You never know how the kids are going to come out. You never know how camp went. All these things, talent aside, yes, Washington has a chance. Like I said, do I trust them completely? Would I put a bunch of money on it? No. I'm obviously rooting for them, and I hope that their veteran leadership and their experience is enough.
No, fair enough. I can't wait for it though. September 1st, we are what, 9 days away from the opening kickoff of college football.
Oh my
Oh
gosh.
man, that is, it really snuck up on us pretty quick. Can't wait.
My nipples just got hard.
Oh my goodness. Well, along those lines, the AP preseason top 25 came out, and I'll run through the top 10. Alabama, number one, Clemson, two, Georgia, three, Wisconsin, four, Ohio State, five, Washington, six, top Pac-12 team, Oklahoma, seven, Miami, eight, Auburn, nine, Penn State, 10. And then we had four other Pac-12 schools, Stanford at 13, USC at 15, and Oregon at 24. Sorry, three other teams all make the top 25. So that's good for us. It's good to see USC up there, even with a quarterback, not dilemma, but just kind of question, even though JT Daniels is absolutely crushing it in camp, apparently. So I don't know. Three in the top 15 is good to start.
Yeah, four in the top 25 is very impressive for any conference.
Yeah.
It is a good showing. Washington at six is probably as high as they could be right now. I don't want to say they're unproven, but they have to show that they can perform on the big stage. Obviously, the Auburn game will prove that. Stanford has just, I swear, been between 15 and 10 preseason for the last like 6 years in a row.
Yeah,
Every
sure.
year everybody knows they're going to be good, but they just don't think they're going to be good enough
Right.
in the playoff. Like that is Stanford's MO. And maybe it's the style of offense they play. I don't know. But that just seems to be exactly where they fit all the time. USC tends to actually start in the preseason around there too at 15
Yeah.
as of late. Obviously, with Sam Darnold, they were a little bit higher than that last year, but outside of that, they've been pretty consistent around the 15 range. I think USC is sneaky good, and I know I'm a homer. If you look at me, if we're on video, I have like 12 USC things on, but we have so much experience on defense. Got a great safety in Marvell Tell. We have good experienced corners, a crazy good linebacker core, good wide receivers that are super athletic. And if JT Daniels can be just half as good as he's supposed to be, this team could be really, really good. Now, obviously, the only thing that everybody's pointing at to be the signal that maybe they're not as good as they were supposed to be is the fact that their schedule is brutal to start.
You go to Stanford in week two and then to Texas in week three, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Yeah, Stanford week two at Texas week three.
I mean, that's brutal. And Texas is ranked in the top 25 right now. They're 23. They're ranked
Yeah,
23rd.
they were actually supposed to be ranked higher than that. I don't exactly know what happened to have them drop down that far, but they have a kind of a quarterback dilemma going on right now too, with a true freshman and a sophomore or something like that. Oregon at 24 is actually intriguing and interesting to me, almost the most of the group, because they're just sneakily on the prowl,
I
man.
know. They're coming up. They have a lot of talent. And obviously, Justin Herbert, when healthy, is crazy good. He's crazy good.
If you see, I would not be shocked to see Oregon inside the top 15 in the first half of the season.
So here's the problem, right?
Their schedule
Their
is terrible,
schedule.
I
And I
know.
wanted to read this because it was on
Gosh, dang it.
CBS.com. Basically, they broke down each conference and who had the toughest schedule, who had the easiest schedule. Toughest schedule in the Pac-12 is USC. Obviously, their non-conference opponents are Notre Dame, UNLV, and Texas. So two of the three are in the top 25. Because I think Notre Dame is actually like 11. Let me check real quick. Yeah, or 12. Notre Dame's ranked 12th,
12.
and Texas 23rd to start. So USC obviously has a very tough road, other than UNLV in the opener. But then the weakest schedule is Oregon, and they play Bowling Green, San Jose State, and Portland State. And there's a nice little asterisk under this under this article, right under their weakest rating, that says this is easily the softest schedule of any major conference team, and not just this season. It is among the softest in recent history. Oregon's 2018 non-conference opponents were a combined 4-32 last season, and may not do much better this time around. So
They're 4-32 in non-Power 5 conferences, right?
the teams they played had a combined record of 4-32 last year.
Oh my gosh,
Yeah.
that's terrible.
So this is why I don't think as good as Oregon can be, and even if I don't think they can make the playoff because their strength of schedule is too weak. And even in conference, they play Stanford and Washington at home, which is obviously, those are still two tough games. But
What if they beat him, though?
if they beat them, then yeah. But I just think that's going to be such a talking point if they go undefeated.
It will be a huge talking
I
point.
mean, that's so that they got to figure that out. They got to figure out how they can get some tougher teams in the schedule. I think, didn't they sign a 2-year contract with Auburn or somebody from the SEC?
I don't know.
We'll have to
I'm
look into
wondering. I
that.
haven't. I don't, That doesn't ring a bell for some
Yeah,
reason.
we'll have to look into that. But
But so that the Washington Oregon schedule, so USC hasn't played Washington or Oregon last year or this year, which is very interesting because Washington and Oregon are obviously traditionally two of the biggest powerhouses in the North. So I would imagine, and obviously the conference schedule is not released yet, but next year that schedule should help USC and Washington and Oregon, because I would imagine they would all play each other going forward, at least for the next 2 or 3 years. I don't know how the rotation works, but for some crazy reason, USC hasn't played either one of those teams. It'll be 2 years in a row now, which is a ding on both of their resume.
True. It's a good point. I don't know. We'll see how it all plays out, but definitely an interesting year. Things are right around the corner. We're getting started, and I couldn't be more excited, to be honest. But I want to dive into a little bit of the Pac-12 schools and what you think would make for a successful season for them. Especially the top 25 teams, right? A couple teams right on the brink, like Utah got a couple votes but didn't crack the top 25, but they're supposed to be pretty good, compete for the South. So, as far as the teams that did make it, what would be considered this year a successful season, do you think, for Washington?
Washington has to win the Pac-12. They have
Yeah.
to be ranked as highly as they're ranked, to have a quarterback with as much experience, to have a great running back in Myles Gaskin. They have to win the Pac-12, and they have to I don't know then that they necessarily have to make the playoff for it to be a successful season because we saw conference champions not make the playoff last year, but they have to win the Pac-12. And if they're the one conference champ that gets snubbed, I still feel like you did what you were supposed to do.
Right.
Now, maybe that's the break-even point. Maybe that for it to be a successful season, they need to make the playoff and get themselves a chance as a national championship. But it's tough. It's tough. It's tough with the reputation of the Pac-12 right now.
Yeah, for sure. What about, I mean, I agree. I think they have to at least, I think they have to at least win the North. That would be the minimum.
At
At
least.
least win the North, win the Pac-12 because of how much hype they're getting right now. I feel like anything other than that is going to be a loss for them. But I think then that brings up Stanford. What would you consider Stanford's a successful season?
So playoff aside, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't think that they're favored to get there or anything. I think going to the Pac-12 championship game, winning the North would be a successful season for Stanford.
Okay.
I think that's pretty much the case most years for Stanford. This year, with Costello and with Bryce Love coming back, who we didn't know if he's going to come back or not, that school has plenty of firepower to beat the majority of teams that they play, right? So they should be in position to win a couple games. You have that Washington Stanford game. It's really going to come down to that at the end of the North. If they win that game, outside of whatever happens to Oregon, and they beat out Oregon and they beat out Washington and they get a chance to play for the Pac-12 championship, that's really what they're fighting for at this point. I don't know that they have the firepower to play for a national championship,
Yeah.
but if they were to play for a Pac-12 championship, I feel like that's kind of what, this program is rooting for at this point.
Yeah, agreed. What about Oregon?
That's the wild card. That's the one I can't figure out
So here's
because,
my
like you said, they are on the up and up, so.
I think if Oregon I think if they can win 8 or 9 games, it'll be a successful year for them, especially coming off with a new coach who I know was promoted from within, but just a new style, figuring out the young talent who's going to show up. And then, I think non-conference, they should win all three, obviously. I think if they can take down Stanford or Washington and then lose one other game somewhere else, maybe outside when they play some of the South teams, because I don't, let me pull up their schedule, but I don't know where they play at, but like I said, I know they play Washington and Stanford at home, so I think they could steal one
I think they
from.
go to Arizona.
I think you're right. Let me look
Remember
real
looking at
quick.
that and thinking, that's not that.
Yeah, because Arizona's going to be tough. Their first four are home games. They go to Cal, to Washington State, to Arizona, and to Oregon State. So
And they
Arizona
go, yeah, they go to Utah
and
also.
to Utah. Ooh, so those two from the South could be tough. So I think realistically, what do they play? 12 games? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. I think they could, if they go 8 or 9 wins, a successful season. Yeah, why did I just have such a hard time?
It's one of those things. Most college football teams play 12 games.
That's true. I just always get confused because we play 9 conference games.
Yeah, you're right. So yeah, I mean that's tough, right? Stanford at home, Washington at home, at Arizona, at Utah,
Yeah.
at Washington State. Washington State's kind of
They're having a, I think they'll have a down year this
kind of
year.
a down year.
Yeah.
But I mean you can't count out these trap games.
True. I mean,
I
that's our
mean,
USC loss last year. I mean, granted,
you
Washington
can't
State
just
was
win
ranked
all the
high.
games you're supposed to win, right? Like that's really difficult to do. So I think you're right. If they win one of those four and they go 9-3,
Yeah.
I don't know. Like a program like that, do you take the recent success and build that into your expectations? Or are you focused on your expectations of a program like Oregon that over the last 10 years has been good? Right? Like it's like
Yeah.
USC, you're like, oh, we're 9-3, that's great. It's like it's not freaking great. We're
Right.
supposed to win national championships. Alabama's supposed to win national championships. Michigan, you think Jim Harbaugh's excited about how they've been the last 5 years?
True.
They've been better than they were the 5 previous years, but they're Michigan.
True. I think that real coaches are realistic though.
I hope so.
Right? So like I mean, I don't I guess nobody really knows how good a team is until the season gets rolling. Sometimes teams can get hot, get on a roll and just get moving. But I would think that for a team last year that kind of struggled without Justin Herbert, they're thinking they could win a large majority of the games if he stays healthy, would be my guess, bringing back a lot of defensive guys too. So maybe, I mean, maybe they're set on winning the Pac-12. I know that's probably every coach's expectation, but like, what realistically does it match up to that? Maybe they have it. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, it was hard to tell because last year they were so bad when Justin Herbert didn't play. So I don't know if people have the answer to that. And I think his expectations are pretty high because he's obviously one of the top two quarterbacks for the draft next year, just based on size and athleticism and arm strength and all that. So I think they have disposable weapons like him in the defense that they could win, but who knows?
Who is this kid from Missouri, by the way?
Oh, Drew, is it Drew Locke?
Something like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
He can't be that good. I've never even heard of him.
SEC bias right there.
Missouri? Come on.
So what about USC? What is a successful season for USC?
USC's got to win the South. They're projected to win the South. They have plenty of talent to win the South, even with the quarterback. It's not a controversy, but
yeah,
even with not really knowing who's going to start, I think at this point, judging by how fall camp has gone, JT Daniels is going to be the guy. What that means is maybe you temper your expectations a little bit as far as the first third of the season goes, because you have a guy that's going to take his first college snaps as an 18-year-old who literally shouldn't even be graduating.
I know. He should still be in high school. That's crazy.
Right? It's like, I start to think about, did he make the right decision coming out early? I mean, he did because Sam Darnold left.
Right. True.
Right? And he was like, Sam Darnold's out. This is my chance. I'm a super smart kid. I'm going to do it. And I get that. But at the same time, you accelerate your growth so much post 18, from like 18 to 22. Like, how much better would he be next year?
True.
I digress. But I think that the team has plenty of talent to win the South. If they don't win the South and play for a Pac-12 championship, it's a failure.
Yeah, and I think that's USC's expectation every year, right? I mean, realistically.
I mean, definitely this year. There were years when you knew it was going to be a battle, but definitely this year. This is a year that they have the talent outside of the quarterback position. We've actually been in positions other years where we've had those weapons with a quarterback and a couple good wide receivers running back, but the other pieces, maybe lack of depth at the offensive line or defensive line positions and that. This year, those other pieces are in place.
Right. True.
It's just about can those skill positions come through. So I think you play for the Pac-12 championship, and for some reason you lose by 5 to Washington or by 5 to Stanford in the Pac-12 championship game.
Or Oregon.
Or Oregon. Hey, I'm not going to count it out.
Yeah, I know. You said that.
I think that would be a success. Sitting here as a fan, if that were to happen and we lost the Pac-12 championship this year and JT Daniels played well and he was healthy going into the next season, I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think then everyone after those kind of top teams, Arizona and Utah, I feel like their expectations for a successful season would be competing for the South, obviously, but I don't know if either of them have enough talent to beat Stanford or Washington or Oregon. But yeah, and then UCLA and Washington State, Arizona State, just hoping to win some games, not make a fool of themselves. Chip Kelly trying to bring some prominence back to UCLA. And Oregon State just trying not to – maybe they're just trying to win one or two games. I think they won one last year.
I want to bet on the battle for last in the South, just because we had those conversations.
I'm going Colorado. I'll bet you.
I know that. That's why we said, all right, everybody, you know, say it on 3, 1, 2, 3, and it's just so different. I feel like we should put $10 on who gets last in the Pac-12 South. Okay. That way we can be just as excited about those teams losing as our teams winning.
So is the bet you chose Arizona State, I chose Colorado, whoever finishes lower between those two teams? Because
yeah, that's
like, because UCLA could technically get last, right?
They could. You're right.
Okay, fair enough. Quick rundown as well. ESPN came out with their preseason All-Americans. Some good representation. Running back Bryce Love, safety Tyler from Stanford, safety Taylor Rapp from UW, punter Mitch Wasnowski from Utah, and kicker Matt Gay from Utah. Apparently, the kicking situation in Utah is pretty epic.
Yeah, special teams, studs.
Yeah, and then some second team other guys that kind of got mentioned. Offensive guard Nate Herbig from Stanford. Tight end Caden Smith, Stanford. Wide receiver Nikhil, the real deal. Harry, what was it? Real deal? Nikhil?
Real deal Nikhil.
Real deal Nikhil Harry, wide receiver ASU. Linebacker Cameron Smith from USC. Linebacker Troy Dye from Oregon. Cornerback Byron Murphy from UW. Punter Jake Bailey from Stanford. And all-purpose Miles Gaskin from UW. What is going on with the Pac-12 kicking situation? Three out of the four Pac-12 kicking positions were preseason All-Americans. Interesting. Anyhow, we have got a very special interview today. Tony Castricone is his name. He is the voice of the Washington Huskies football and basketball program. His voice just sucks you right in, so I can't wait for you guys to hear this interview. But he's got a lot of good insight on the Huskies, on Chris Peterson, and he even answers some of our social debates, which is always a good time. So here he is, Tony Castricone. I want to welcome to the show a very special guest, not only because of what he does, but also because he has the greatest name out there. Tony Castricone, the silky smooth voice of the Huskies. Tony Castricone, welcome to the show. Thanks for being on.
Thanks, Tone. Or did you go by Anthony, Tony, Tone? What should I call you?
You know, my real name is Anthony, but that's only when I get in trouble from my mom. Does that name come out? So... anything other than that would be fine.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, no problem. So I want to start, obviously, your voice is silky smooth, and I heard that your talents were first found in an ice cream store. Is that true?
I guess my talents were first found probably the day that I was born.
That's a good point.
That way, because my mom says that all the other babies in the nursery were whining and crying these annoying high-pitched squeals. And I was just laying there saying, wow. So, you know, I mean, it's funny. I don't really consider the voice a talent necessarily. I feel blessed that it's one that people think is good. So that way it gave me a chance to have a career doing something I was passionate about. But, you know, I mean, there are so many people who are just fantastic reporters, journalists, everything else. They're so with the content that they deliver, and I have just got so much respect for other broadcasters and other journalists. And now we see in today's day and age, people who start out in newspapers end up on network TV and everything else based on the great stories they write and tell and break. And so I think that's really where the craft, the hard work, and the craft gets honed over the years.
Well, That's great. I love that. And like I said, we appreciate how much work you put into. We follow you on Instagram and Twitter and all that. We see you dropping the stats of the day leading up to the big game here just around the corner. And that's kind of where we want to get started with you. Obviously, UW has a huge opener in Atlanta against Auburn. And I think there is a tremendous amount of, you know, pressure for them to play well, obviously, because it's a big-time game. But also to kind of get that terrible taste out of the mouth for the whole Pac-12 of how we performed in last year's bowl season. So I think this is a chance for them to put the whole Pac-12 back on the map. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, based on the small sample size that exists in college football, I think we overreact to singular events far too often. I think if Washington wins this game on the last second field goal, it does not mean that the Pac-12 as a whole is back. And I think if Auburn wins this game on a last-second field goal, it by no means says Washington just can't hang. They just can't compete. I think, you know, we get 60 minutes a week to evaluate, and then these narratives will get created, and they'll become these tidal waves based on what we see in those 60 minutes. And a lot of times there's many, many variables at play, some of which never get discussed. And so, you know, one of the things that really hurt Washington last year was the injury bug.
Right.
No two teams are the same in the way that they're affected by injury from year to year. And I think that had Washington been completely healthy, what do they look like in 2017? Who knows? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's no use crying over spilled milk, but they could have been a college football playoff team if they would have been fully healthy, potentially. So, I would just venture to say that I think It's going to be a great celebration of college football. What a great kickoff game. Two top 10 teams in an amazing venue. Two great conferences. Two teams with rich tradition and fan bases. And somebody is going to start off what they hope is a run toward a national championship with a huge win.
Absolutely.
And I just think that that in and of itself is more than enough to be really excited about this game.
I totally agree. And you're a consummate pro just based on the picture you could just paint of that game with your words. It makes me want to have it happen tomorrow. That's how that's how well you just laid that thing out for us.
I feel you, man. I mean, I've been counting this thing down on Twitter since we were at 132 days.
Oh, yeah.
You know, now we're down to 9, so I just, I'm ready to go.
Me too. And I do think the Huskies have a shot. We're relatively new in the podcast game, and we just got one of our first articles out about how we think Washington has a shot to actually win. And I think because of their experience, defense, and the head coach, Chris Peterson, I really do think they have a shot to beat Auburn. Would you agree? I mean, you're around the program a lot more. You're around the guys. So what are you seeing out there? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think they have a shot to beat anybody. I really do. I think that whether or not they play up to their potential on any given day, again, comes down to you get one crack at it and there are going to be other variables at play. I always think college football is such a game of momentum, and so often something will occur in a game that you just can't predict. You don't see it coming, but there will be a play that starts to tilt momentum, and you've only got, you know, from the time that that play occurs until the end of the game to switch momentum back in your favor if it happens to go against you. So Washington really does not want to be the first team to turn the ball over. They really don't want to give up a big play on special teams. You know, you'd like to be the one who capitalizes on that, get that positive momentum going, and then force an Auburn team that really has kind of a shaky offensive line and some new guys at running back, force them to maybe come out of their game plan offensively a little bit and be forced to throw the football and play from behind. I think if Washington can get out to an early lead, I think that really gives them a great shot.
Absolutely, especially with the powerhouse secondary that Washington has, top one or two in the country. Obviously, it's debated all the time. But, yeah, you make Jared Sittum throw, and that's a scary defensive backfield to be thrown up against every down, every other down, whatever they have to do to get back in the game. So I think you're spot on there.
Yeah, oh, look, Jared Stidham's a great quarterback, and he's the kind of guy that can really hurt you in a dual threat way, even though he's primarily a passer and not really known for his feet. But, you know, much like Jake Browning is a guy that is capable of running and picking up 15, 20 yards on third and long and getting you a first down, even though he's not an option guy, he's not seen as a dual threat guy. I think Jared Stidham is the same thing. You know, there's a couple of injured wide receivers for Auburn who had ACL injuries in spring camp that aren't going to be able to go. But Ryan Davis, who set an Auburn school record last year with 84 receptions on the season, he's available, and he's going to be a target frequently in this game. So, you know, I think, again, I think momentum is going to be huge. Who comes out and strikes first? Who commits the first turnover? Who makes a play or maybe doesn't make a play on special teams? I think those are going to be the things that differentiate what otherwise seems to be a very close game on paper.
Absolutely, and I cannot wait for it. We will be watching and listening to you. Hopefully that will be our game plan for that Saturday, which we are really looking forward to. I want to talk a little bit about, obviously they have a lot of talent coming back. A lot of seniors, Miles Gaskin, and offensive linemen as well. But the one that kind of sticks out is Jake Browning, as far as what kind of season is he going to have in his senior year. From 2 years ago, where, you know, 4,300 yards and 35 touchdowns or whatever it was, to last year where his numbers dropped pretty significantly, I know with a shoulder injury. But how would you say he's looking right now in camp? And also, how does he compare to the other QBs around the country?
Yeah, great question. You know, I'm not George Whitfield. I'm not Bush Hamden. I'm not like a real great evaluator of quarterback talent and what kind of potential it has on the next level. But I have gotten a chance to just evaluate habits a little bit. And Jake Browning is as professional as any kid that I've seen in the college ranks about the way that he just studies the game, his approach to every single day. You know, I think Bush Hamden and Coach Peterson have really, I don't know how much they needed to convince Jake to do this, because Jake seems to be pretty mature and good at this sort of thing, but they've really gotten him to buy into just embracing the boredom of going through all the routines and all the little exercises and all the film and all the everything that just makes you a pro. And I don't think Jake took as big of a step back last year as a lot of people do. I think it's so easy to look at numbers and infer that. But 43 touchdown passes probably was not going to be lived up to no matter what Washington did, even if they won a national championship last year. And the Huskies didn't throw the ball as much last year. They had a couple of games where it just made sense to run the ball. They didn't have as many targets at wide receiver as they did in 16. They had a little bit more beat up offensive line in 2017. So there are a lot of things at play there. And, you know, yet Jake had a very high completion percentage, and he still had a great touchdown to interception ratio. And I don't think... Sometimes it's very easy to see that a play didn't succeed, but you might not know what could have happened on that play that would have been 20 times worse, maybe fumbling a football, maybe taking a 15-yard sack. The things that didn't happen, sometimes an incomplete is actually a really good play. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where Coach Peterson has a lot of appreciation for Jake. He probably feels like more often than not maximizes the potential, makes the best possible decision on any given play. And I think that's all you can ask a quarterback to do. If his numbers weren't up to snuff, look, he's got a chip on his shoulder and he's out to prove to the world that he's capable of doing all the right things they need to do in order to win and to do all the things that he needs to do in order to get to the next level. But as far as whether or not that equates to having the same statistics, I just don't think that's the right evaluator.
Agree. Great response. And I think for us, we are excited to see what he can do, because I do think this is the year with experience plays a huge part, especially in college football. When you have fourth-year guys, and especially at the quarterback position, he is basically a second coach out there at this point, being able to run the offense, know what's coming. And I don't know for sure, but I would imagine they give him a little bit of leeway and some checking out of stuff if he sees defenses play in a certain way. But I want to jump to, obviously being the second coach on the field is great, but their first coach, Chris Peterson, is pretty special. And I know you get to be around him, and we're very jealous of you here on the podcast because we love him and we think he is something truly unique. So what would you say makes him so special?
I would say his authenticity. I mean, I think he's the real deal. I think, first of all, he does have the right approach to this whole entire thing, which is if you take care of yourself and if you do things the right way, then you're going to maximize the likelihood that you're going to be successful. And then you're going to be successful the right way without selling yourself out, and then you get to have your cake and eat it too. Mm-hmm. Right, you get to not only be a champion, but you also get to have good grades in the classroom, and you don't have to worry about scandal and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's he's just one guy. He needs to get all his staff to buy into that, and then his staff has to get all the players to buy into that. And I think that he surrounded himself with quality people who are doing a good job of achieving that goal and that mission. And so I think, it's fun to win games, no mm-hmm. question about it. But someone asked him the other day in the wake of what's going on at Ohio State and some other programs across the country, they asked him at a press conference, is it impossible to monitor everything in this win at all costs era? And Coach Pete just snapped back, it's not win at all costs. Mm-hmm. He's like, I don't think it is. That's not what we do. I think that he is the real deal. You mm-hmm. know, there's the CBS Sports candid coaches poll that they put out recently where they said, who's the most underrated coach in college football? And they had other Division I coaches that they polled. And Chris Peterson and David Shaw shared the number one spot. They also asked the question, who runs the cleanest program? And again, Chris Peterson, David Shaw shared the number one spot. Mm-hmm. And so he's not just someone who talks the talk, but other people recognize that this thing that's very hard to do in order to run a clean program and a successful program at the same time, Chris, he knows how to do it. Mm-hmm. He hasn't sold out his values. And, you know, I think he's reaping. Here's the other thing, too. You got to give credit to the athletic department and AD Jen Cohen for creating the culture to allow Chris to do it his way, mm-hmm. and to give him the space to be able to do that. And, you know, so many people get cut loose for wins and losses nowadays so quickly. It's unbelievable to me. And I was reading some biographies earlier, and like John Wooden and Coach Krzyzewski on the basketball side, two of the probably the two, maybe the two greatest, most successful, most prolific men's basketball coaches ever. If you look at their records through their first 5 and 7 years of their career, they would have been fired for 5 and 7 years of the wins-loss record that they had. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's just the pressure that coaches are under now. You have to win. But I think Coach Pete has his priorities in order. He has infused that all the way through the culture of the program, and that's why I think he's the real deal.
Well, that was the best pitch for any high school kid out there to go play at UW. And I don't have any eligibility left, but if I did, you just convinced me to go play for Chris Peterson. So
I know, man. I wish I could go like old kicks or something like that. You know? Wouldn't it be amazing to like just be the backup long snapper or something to be a part of that program?
Absolutely. Especially playing right there on the water. That's the beautiful, beautiful backdrop to play in. Seattle's a great city, obviously. And then you have the head coach and the whole athletic program like you're talking about, and you see what can happen, and it's great, and it makes us appreciate UW and Chris Peterson and what he's doing up there even more. I want to play a little bit of fill in the blank with you. So we're going to do a couple of these. The first two are still football related. The last three, Kyle and I get into a lot of social debates here, and they're actually what gets us the most traction, and so we're going to hit you with a couple of our biggest social questions that we've answered. So the first one is the game you are most concerned about this season is, other than the Auburn game. So I can run.
Maybe at Utah.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe at Oregon. It's one of those two.
Yep, that's what I was looking at. Obviously, Utah is looking to maybe be a spoiler in the South, even though may not be somewhat of a surprise because everyone seems to think that they have a whole lot of talent and obviously good coaching staff down there too. And Oregon is on the up and up too. And when Justin Herbert is healthy, he is the real deal as well. Okay, what about the game you are least concerned about?
North Dakota.
Oh, yep.
Feel real good about that one.
Yep, I would imagine. Okay, good to know. Now we are going to get into our social debates. First one, NSYNC or Backstreet Boys?
Oh, gosh. I can't even remember the difference between the two, quite honestly. It's too long ago.
Yep, it was. So in that case, you will default to NSYNC because that's who I went with. So good choice. I appreciate that. The Tony connection.
Boys out of alphabetical order, I guess. I don't know.
I thought we had the Tony connection that you would just choose NSYNC for me, but that's all right. You can go with Backstreet. Okay.
Sorry to let you down.
No, it's all good. Let's go on to what is the more important ingredient in a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, the peanut butter or the jelly?
The peanut butter, because you don't even need jelly in order to have a great peanut butter sandwich.
I love it. We've had a couple people go jelly, and it just blew my mind. I don't understand. I feel like peanut butter is such a staple. And
I feel like you don't have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich without peanut butter. I mean, like you can kind of call it the same thing without jelly, but without peanut butter, you don't have anything even resembling a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah, and most people, like you said, I don't think would have just a jelly sandwich. That's more like jelly toast at breakfast or something.
Yeah, exactly.
The only valid argument for jelly so far that I've heard is that it's very dynamic. You can get different flavors, and it can change the tone of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. But I think on the flip side, the consistency of the peanut butter is truly what makes it for me.
Yeah, I think the fact that it's interchangeable shows that it's not as critical.
We needed that about 2 weeks ago when we were arguing with the jelly guy. last one. peanut butter and jelly or any other sandwich, but what is the proper way to cut a sandwich? Is it straight down the middle? Is it diagonal? Is it not at all?
I go not at all, although my wife does diagonal, and I'm becoming a fan of that, but I always used to do right down the middle. I'd say not at all, though. I mean, if you're leaving it up to me, that's the way to go.
Okay, fair enough. I'm a diagonal guy myself. I think it makes for the ease of the first bite. You know, you got that corner piece. You can just kind of get right there, and then you still have a lot of the middle. But I also understand not cutting it at all. I'm firmly against down the middle.
Why?
For just argument's sake on the podcast, I feel like somebody has to be, and Kyle's down the middle, and I got to be the opposite. So I'm going to. I do like the diagonal, but I just think it's more efficient.
That doesn't sound firmly against it. You're taking the stance for the sake of argument. That's not firmly against
it. That's a good point.
I hear where you're going with it.
Oh, well, good. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I know that we are very appreciative of you coming on, and we are very excited for the opener against Auburn. Do you want to let everyone know where they can find you at on Twitter or Instagram?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. Follow me on Twitter at Castricone. That's CASTRICONE. And then the other thing that we've started recently is a new website called WashingtonImgNetwork.com. And I would just love for people to go there and check it out. I've got a blog on there that will have all my latest thoughts on whatever's going on with UW football, basketball, whatever. We've got an updated programming calendar, list of affiliates, list of places you can listen on your mobile device, laptop, desktop. You know, we've got classic calls from Bob Rondo up there, which are really, really cool. Some other behind the scenes information. We've got a couple of different podcasts. So I would just encourage you to go check out the website. We've worked really hard on it, and we really like it. It's WashingtonImgNetwork.com.
Awesome. Everyone, go out, find them, listen. You're great at what you do, and we really appreciate you coming on. So thank you very much, Tony.
Thanks, Tony. Anytime.
All right. Go Huskies. Great interview. Silky smooth voice. I could see why he does what he does.
It's amazing. Practice makes perfect.
We'll get.
I wish I could talk like that.
I was going to say, we'll never actually sound like him, but hopefully our delivery can be as good as his.
So it's a natural gift.
It is, yeah.
Speaking, I think some people grow up and they're 12 years old and they're talking to their parents and all they're asking for is like a PB&J and you're just like, your voice is elegant. You're going to be an announcer one day, you know?
Father, may I have a peanut butter and jelly? And it's like, wow, you should announce football games.
I am ready for lunch, Father.
Oh, man. Well, big shout out to him. Thanks for coming on. We got to get him back on as Washington hopefully makes a push to the college football playoff. But, you know, other big news in the Pac-12, which I think makes fans like you and I very happy. University of Colorado and Arizona State are expanding the sale of alcohol within their stadiums, even letting people take the beers back to their seats. They have made it clear, though, they won't be selling behind the student sections. Thank God, because they won't be able to get it anywhere else.
Yeah, so there's going to be electric laser fields surrounding the student section. That way, once you check in, mm-hmm. you can't go anywhere else to get alcohol.
Not a lick of alcohol will be served to you or be near you.
Oh, wait, that doesn't exist, so they can just walk 10 feet. But I guess it appeases the 65-plus crowd. That's the boosters, the alumni, the people that pay all this money.
Yeah.
The people that are worried about the hoopla. The that happens so inside of college football stadiums.
But I do think it's good for the common fan, right? Like even at USC, what you have to go outside into the little, like around the stadium that they have all the little tents and stuff with the food.
They only have one at the Coliseum. They only have one area that you can get beer inside the gates, and it's restricted.
That's right. It's like VIP, right? We've never been in. We could sneak in. We might get in because of the podcast. We should ask about that.
I think I'm going to have access next season, so just hold your horses.
Are you really?
That's right.
Wow, that's a game changer.
Moving on up.
Not because of the podcast, but that's okay.
Not because of the podcast, but yes. So one of the things I read in this article was, look, a quote, continuing to enhance security measures for the safety of our fans while also offering expanded concession options.
Yes.
That's like, hey, everybody, I'm going to throw one more minimum wage security guard at you and give you a whole bunch of beer so you can go back to your seats. And then also one of the things that stood out to me was it said – just this offseason, Arizona, Oregon, and Oregon State all expanded beer and wine sales to general seating while also making changes to entry-exit policies to help out with security as well. So it seems to be spreading.
Yeah, and I think it's a good idea. One, because like you said, the fans in there want to just have a beer and enjoy the game. And for others, kind of like me and you, who tend to pregame and, you know, tailgate relatively hard, we won't have to go as hard knowing that we can get a beer now in the stadium and we won't have to... be a little fuzzy during the first quarter.
Funny you say that. One of the things, this article is great that I read. The last sentence on this bottom paragraph is, the moves are no doubt designed to add a new revenue stream to everybody's coffers, but the side effect of less binge drinking during games is certainly part of the equation as well. And I was like, people binge drink before college football games? What?
Tailgate. What? Tailgating is a different word for binge drinking, I feel like.
It's like yes, that is very true. And then also it said, that's all good news to those who like to enjoy a nice beverage during a game this season, especially if the Sun Devils and Buffs endure a rough outing or two at home this year. Which, so I was like, man, it's not a coincidence that the two teams that are going to be terrible –
increase sales.
Increase alcohol sales.
And two of the teams that we are thinking are just made a bet on who's going to be worse. This is what whoever loses, not only $10, whenever we're in one of those stadiums next, has to buy the beer.
Agreed.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. I like that.
The coaching staff is like, listen, we're not going to be good. Can we do free beer? Okay, we can't do free beer. Can we just sell beer?
Yeah, we got to figure out how to keep people liquored up. Yeah. Oh, man. But anywho, hopefully safety measures are taken because you don't want people with excessive. But I wonder if they will limit it. Kind of like when you go to, I don't know, I think the fair does, you can only buy 3 beers or something. They give you a wristband or something like that.
I'm sure, for legal reasons, they have to be a certain amount of restrictive.
Yeah. Or you can only buy, 2 at a time. Sometimes they make you do that. Or you have to show the ID of the person that you're buying it for. Something along those lines.
Yeah. Most likely.
Yeah. All of which is good because now we can have beer in stadiums, which is awesome. Let's move on. That kind of wraps up Pac-12 football, and we're right around the corner, so we spent a lot of time on it. But that's what's coming, and we really love this time of year. But there is golf right now too. Big time golf. Getting right into the FedEx Cup. So we're going to get into some Gabbin golf. Kyle, take it away.
All right. So this last week was actually a down week. We had the PGA Championship. I went absolutely bonkers talking about Tiger Woods. What a Sunday. A break week for most of the big names. The Wyndham Championship. Mm-hmm. We talked about it a little bit last week. Brent Snedeker shot a 59 on Thursday. Kind of set him up for the rest of the week. Ended up winning at 21 under. Which is just absolute ridiculous score.
He shot a 59, right, on the first day?
59 on Thursday. He shot a 65 on Sunday. I mean, when you shoot a 59 on Thursday,
you're probably going to be okay.
You're in good shape.
Unless you take 5 hacks in the sand like I did on that one hole. But other than that, you'll be all right.
Yeah. That doesn't happen to the pros very often. underneath him, Webb Simpson, CT Pan, DA Points, Jim Furyk, Brian Gay, Ryan Moore. Not a super strong field, but good for Brent Snedeker, kind of got him up a little bit farther in the FedEx Cup playoffs. So that's the last break week of the season for the most part. Next week starts the Northern Trust, which is the top 125 players in the FedEx Cup standings. Currently at the moment, top 10 guys, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, Justin Rose, Bubba, Jason Day, Webb Simpson, Francisco Molinari, and Bryson DeChambeau. Ooh. So pretty strong field going to the FedEx Cup playoffs. The way it basically breaks down is 125, top 125 going to the Northern Trust Open. After that, they actually has an actual cut with usually top 80 and or ties. top 100 in the Dell Technologies Championship, top 70 going to the BMW Championship, and then the top 30 play at the Tour Championship in Eastlake in Atlanta, Georgia. Tiger right now sitting at number 20. I feel like even if he drops the ball, he's going to qualify for the Tour Championship in Eastlake, which is the week before the Ryder Cup. So 1, 2, 3, 4 FedEx Cup playoff tournaments.
Boom, 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 boom.
Right. Ryder Cup next week. This next 5 weeks is going to be awesome.
Man, it always is fun as the field gets narrowed down further and further and further, because you get just the top guys playing their best game in all in one spot.
Yeah, and I think interesting about the FedEx Cup playoffs is they had to do something to make this worth it, right? You have the four majors, which is the most important thing. You have the WGCs. There's four of them outside of that. Those are number two.
Right.
And the FedEx is probably sitting there thinking, how do we get these guys to pay attention at the end of the season when the Ryder Cup points are over? It's over right now.
True.
Like the top eight guys that automatically made the Ryder Cup, those points are locked. Mm-hmm. So these tournaments don't matter. There's a $10 million prize for whoever wins the FedEx Cup. Yeah. So that's a really easy way to make it matter.
Yeah, that's pretty epic. And that's a lot of money.
That's a lot. Even for Tiger, that's a lot of money.
I mean, because most purses for the guys that get first place are, what, around $1 million. The Masters, I think, is like 1.6, 1.7, like that. So to win three tournaments or four tournaments and – or to be the winner of the fourth tournament, because you don't have to win the first three technically. But
you don't have to win the fourth either.
You just need more points, right? Mm-hmm. The most, but they so but they still keep points.
They keep points, but going into the Tour Championship at Eastlake, it reseeds.
Got it.
So that if you were to, for some reason, win the first three, you wouldn't be so far ahead that nobody could catch you. They reseed to where the top five of the 30 going into the Tour Championship control their own destiny.
Got it.
If you were in that top five in the Tour Championship and you win the Tour Championship, you win the FedEx Cup.
Got it.
If you're outside of that top five, you need a little help.
Mm-hmm. Fair. And then we get into the Ryder Cup right after that's over. We're still waiting to hear from our boy Jim if Tiger's made the cut.
Nobody's waiting.
He's pulling a power play. I'm telling you.
We're still waiting to see if Tiger's going to let Jim be the coach. That's what we're waiting.
I do think the narrative has changed quite a bit, hasn't it? It's gone from, is Jim going to let Tiger be on the team, to is Tiger going to let Jim even go to the tournament?
Jim saw Tiger get the solo second at the PGA Championship, and he's like, ah, shoot. Yeah. I thought I was going to coach this year. That sucks.
Oh, man. Good stuff. Any other golf-related news?
No, not really. This is the final stretch. It's exciting but depressing at the same time. After the Ryder Cup, there's a pretty gigantic October, November, December lag where there's the wraparound season that starts, so a lot of the younger kids have just gotten their car and stuff like that play. But other than that, nobody really plays until the Tournament of Champions in January. So it's kind of the off season. The good news is it's football season, baby.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I don't even think about it.
Absolutely. So do you have a prediction right now?
For the FedEx Cup?
FedEx Cup. Who's it going to be?
Oh, man, that's hard. I like JT.
Really?
Yeah, I just feel like he's been playing well. He won the WGC at Firestone. He seems to be a little more consistent than DJ is most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to count out Brooks, and it's hard to count out DJ, but if I had to bet on it, I would say JT. If I was going to bet with my heart, if Tiger were to win the FedEx Cup, it would just be amazing. And yeah. he's ranked 20. Like, he has a legitimate chance.
Yeah, no, true. I think I'm going Dustin Johnson.
I know he's number one in the rankings, so that's a stretch.
I know, but I always go with Ricky or Phil, and that hasn't worked out for me so well. Maybe I'll go with DJ. I'm going to pull a shakiest gun in the West here. Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, okay. Maybe. So
just in case he loses, you're like, well, I didn't say for sure.
maybe DJ. I could maybe also go Brooks or maybe even Justin Rose, who's playing well. But I'm not going to decide fully yet until Saturday of the last round, Saturday of the last tournament. Oh,
terrible,
man.
Terrible.
That's great. We got to get him back on, by the way, during the FedEx Cup at some point.
We do.
Let's transition to the Blitz Package segment, where anything goes. I've got a couple of great ones lined up for you. I don't know if you're ready.
I'm ready, baby.
Okay,
bring it.
I'll start. So I got to thinking when we were playing golf in Palm Springs this weekend, when we were driving by, when we were playing those couple holes right by the pool, right? They were playing some absolute jams. And it got me thinking, if you had to pick one dance jam to dance to for the rest of your life, anytime you went to a wedding, anytime you're in your house, I wrote down some of my favorites. I'm going to make you choose one of those or any Michael Jackson song.
Okay.
So here's the list. Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock. It Takes Two. It Takes Two to Make a Thing Go Right. That's a jam.
That's a jam.
Blackstreet, No Diggity. Lil Jon and the East Side Boys, Get Low. Usher, Yeah. Mystical, Shake Your Ass. Genuine, Pony.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Salt and Pepper, Push It. Or any Michael Jackson song.
I love MJ.
I know.
But, man, you picked some really good ones. I actually had a couple in my head.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, these are, I got to go with this. And then you said them. And I was like, oh, man, those are in this group.
Well, which ones did I leave off that you were thinking?
California Love by Dr. Dre.
Mm-hmm. It's a good one.
But I think I got to go No Diggity.
That's the one that was playing when I thought of this question.
No Diggity, Blackstreet featuring Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
It's kind of my go-to. Like whenever I would like turn up the heart rate of everybody at the party, just kind of get everybody going. Everybody knows, everybody's going to sing it. At least everybody in our age range is going to be like, yeah, that's how the party started, right?
Yeah, true.
Genuine Pony is a close number two.
And that is a very sensual song, if you will.
It is.
A different type of dancing goes on with that song. I believe. But you know, No Diggity, let me play it real quick. I feel like that is up your alley because you don't have to do too much dancing, right? Like it's, you can kind of just stay in your comfort zone because it's a nice kind of slow.
That's all I got.
Yeah, that's all you got.
Cross your hands. That's all I got is my comfort zone. And I'm only good when everybody else is dancing because nobody can see what anybody else is doing.
See, like you just have to kind of stay within your means. You don't have to go too far. You're like a Hitch. Or you're like, you want to be like Hitch. It's a jam.
Oh, that beat is so clean. Isn't it clean?
It's very
good. All you can think about is a little guy on the piano.
Yeah.
Video, like...
Oh, man. Yeah, but as much fun as I had making that list, I think I would have to go with a Michael Jackson song. Maybe, probably PYT would be
really?
The one. Yeah.
It's not my favorite.
Really?
No.
Oh, I love that. I mean, Billie Jean, Beat It, Smooth Criminal, Thriller, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, some absolute jams.
Billie Jean and Smooth Criminal
are
one and two for me.
We should do a Michael Jackson. Well, that's what we'll do. We'll do a Michael Jackson top five songs, our favorite songs.
That'd be awesome.
At some point.
You know what? That Alien Ant Farm.
Ooh, the remix?
Smooth Criminal's really good.
Yeah, that is really good.
Yeah, that was ballsy.
Yeah, that's
for,
tough
for
to
him
do.
To do, by the way. And he's a one-hit wonder.
Animal Ant Farm?
Alien Ant Farm?
Animal Farm is a good book, too.
Animal Farm of Animals and Ants.
Alien Ant Farm. Yeah, I mean, that's tough when you're crossing over genres, right? Ooh. Like, you're going to the greatest.
Yeah, that's...
That's not easy to do.
I feel like he was alive then, too.
Yeah, because I was in high school.
Yeah.
So that was, doesn't matter how long ago it was, but it was long
ago. He was alive.
He was alive. Yeah, that's all that matters.
That's the most important thing.
Oh, all right, what do you got?
So this weekend in Palm Springs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I'm very tan because I was at the beach for a week. You were at the beach too, not for a week, but you were there.
Yeah, a couple days.
And I also went to the beach when we got back from Palm Springs on that Sunday. When I was at work, I had four people stop what they were saying to comment on how dark my face looked. Which was, it got to the point where it was almost insulting, right? So I got to thinking, would you rather be so tan that you look like that 80-year-old guy in Miami that has just never been out of the sun, or so fried that if anybody touches you, you shriek in horror?
Oh, no, I'd have to go Miami guy. Even though you start to look leathery, like a horse saddle, I think red is rough. And I get red before I get tan, unfortunately. So I know the horrors of actually having to do that, to go through that.
So the one thing I would say was, the red's going to go away.
That's true.
Right? Like, you're going to get, like, you might blister a little bit, like, you might peel a little bit, but then, like, 3 weeks later, you're straight. Like, true. Like, that tan, if somebody was like, hey, Tony, come in here, I'm going to give you spray tan for 3 hours, like, you are stuck with that color for a long time.
But that's a good point. Is it like a leathery brown tan, or is it like an orange spray-on fake tan?
It's like a, you're so tan, it looks horrible.
Okay. Oh, man.
Like, where if you're walking down the street, everybody turns and looks. That's what I'm thinking of.
But, okay, I feel like they would do that red, too, though. Like, when you see someone with a gnarly sunburn, you're like, ooh, that's gotta hurt, right? Like, yeah, that's what you're thinking in your head.
Very true, very true. You get the same look for both.
Ooh, I don't know. Yeah, that's tough. I still think I'd go really dark. Like, where my teeth are so white because my skin's so dark. Not because my teeth are actually really white, but just because my skin is dark and relative.
Every time you smile, everybody's like, whoa! Put those things away.
Oh, man. That's a good question. Okay, my next one is in preparation for next week. We're bringing Thunder Dan back on, Dan Krikorian, who we're about to drop an article he wrote about ranking the best Pac-12 mascots. So my question to you is, who do you consider the best mascot in the Pac-12? Not like Bruins for UCLA, but like Joe Bruin, the actual guy in the suit that represents the school.
So what I will say was, I get something out of the way, Traveler is the best mascot. But I'm biased, and it's an actual elegant horse. And whenever I get a dog, I'm gonna name it Traveler. But that aside, the best mascot in the Pac-12 is the buffalo.
Okay, pretty good
for Colorado. I mean, that is just a bitchin' animal, man. And that thing goes flying around the stadium. Traveler runs around the stadium, but it's a horse. You can tame him. People ride him. You feed him. It's fine. Like, there was a movie where you put peanut butter in the horse's mouth and he talks. Like, it's kind of a domesticated animal. The buffalo, we were there. The thing goes crazy in that stadium. And there's two just as crazy students running 4 240s like next to him, trying
holding,
not to die,
holding it. Yeah.
Holding on to it. So
they have to
say, like, I'm probably forgetting somebody, but that just sticks out in my mind. So I got to go with the buffalo.
Okay. They have to sign some sort of waiver.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Because there's, you're, yeah. I mean, something bad could. Honestly, they were flying. Like, they had to be track guys because that buffalo was running full speed.
Whatever rodeo clowns sign when they do their thing, sign the same form.
That's what they signed too.
Same exact form. They're like, wait, this is rodeo clown on it. You're like, yeah, that's the form.
Sign absolutely. That. Oh, man. When we saw that, though, live, that was pretty epic.
That's so cool.
We're like, man, I wish I could bring a beer in here, but dang, that buffalo is pretty cool.
We were 1 year too early.
Yeah, one year. We got to go back, though, because that stadium was epic.
Yeah.
I know I'm probably being a bit of a homer here, too, but the Oregon Duck is iconic. The scarf, the fat belly, the giant orange webbed feet. I'm pretty sure its name is Puddles. It's pretty freaking cool. And it does all the push-ups on, like, the table that they hold up above the students or on the ground when they score.
Yeah, but it's not a real animal.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be real.
It doesn't have to be.
There's only, like, two real ones in all of them.
You're saying that a guy in a duck costume is better than a real buffalo?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
So what I will tell you is I went outside of my homerness and chose a non-biased mascot, and you were just like, screw that.
I think the Duck is the best. I think it's fun because it's some of the other characters look like real. They try to make them look too real. This one is like, mm-hmm. Hey, I know I'm a cartoon duck and I'm out here running on the field doing push-ups and it's funny. So I'm going mm-hmm. the Duck.
I feel like I don't know all of the mascots. Like what they actually look like in their costumes. Mm. Like what's the Utah mascot?
Swoop. It's a hawk.
It's a Ute. They're the Utes, but like what is it? It's a hawk?
Yeah, it's a red hawk. So Dan's gonna break this down for us next week, but
that's kinda cool.
Yeah. But like, okay. I mean, whatever. That's like a hawk. I get it. But I don't think it's the coolest.
But is a hawk a Ute? No, right?
I don't know what a Ute is.
That's why I don't like it.
Yeah, because if you're not exactly what you say you are.
Yeah, you have to connect it. Yeah. Like if somebody says like, well, I say go Trojans and it's a horse.
But he's dressed like a Roman soldier.
Tommy Trojan is riding Traveler.
Exactly. And he's dressed like a Trojan.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a dual mascot thing.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to that conversation. That's awesome. Yeah. You know what I was like is the baseball. I don't think their mascots are like presidents or whatever, but like during the All-Star game, they have the races.
And they run around the field.
And they just take each other out like crazy. Oh, those are hilarious.
One of my favorite things during the Pro Bowl was when they always used to have the mascots play against like one of the Pop Warner teams. And the guys in the mascots and like the costumes would just go so hard against these little kids, but they're dressed like a Colt or like a Bronco or like a Seahawk or something. So
they can like barely see out of like the mesh that is like the eyes or the mouth or whatever.
Some of these little kids in full pads are trying to tackle like a giant Miami Dolphin guy running around in a suit.
That might be better than the Pro Bowl itself.
Oh yeah,
probably more entertaining than actual 300-pound men just like playing flag football.
Yeah, because they don't actually play, so it doesn't.
No, stupid.
They might as well just make it like actual flag or 7-on-7 and let like the big fat linemen play wide receiver and stuff. I feel like I would watch that more than.
I would 100% rather watch them play flag football.
Yeah,
and take the pads off, take the helmets off. Let me see these guys' faces. Throw some flags on them. Make it like a backyard pickup game. Let's see it.
Yeah, and like maybe you can only play the position you got elected for. For one quarter, and then you have to play something else.
That'd be awesome.
Then you get guys doing other things, and you just get to see their talent overall. I don't know. I think it'd be good, but
I think it'd be good for the league too.
Yeah,
people want to see these guys' faces. They want to see what they look like. People want to see Antonio Brown at full speed.
Right.
You know what he's at full speed without pads on.
And I feel like the skills challenge was way more entertaining this last year than the game too. When they have the wide receivers do the stuff, and they got to catch like toe touch on the sideline, like. Over the shoulder and then like straight up over the other shoulder and like they make them run like 150 yards and catch like 10 balls or whatever. I think that's fun.
Yeah,
see them do that. But anyway, that was not for us to kind of slide into hate mode. We've been pretty good. You've been pretty good.
I've been pretty good.
You have been pretty good. All right. Do you have any others for me?
I just have one more quick one that I was going to do last week, but I forgot. And then we started talking about golf this week. So Brooks Koepka obviously has 4 wins, 3 of which are majors, mm-hmm. right? I was talking about JT. When you talk about JT, you naturally talk about Jordan Spieth.
Right.
So whose career would you rather have at this point? Justin Thomas with 9 PGA Tour victories mm-hmm. and 1 major.
Okay.
One of those 8 that's not a major is a WGC. So 1 WGC, 1 major, 7 other tournaments. And then Brooks, who has 1, you know, I think lower level PGA Tour victory and 3 majors. If you were, both of them are like 25.
Right.
I think Brooks is actually a couple years older, but regardless, you're in your mid-20s. Who would you rather be?
I think I'd have to go JT. I think consistency is key in golf, right? Like, if he doesn't win another major the rest of his career, but he wins another 10 to 15 tournaments. Like to have that many tournament wins on the tour is impressive. Right. So I think I would take his also because winning 9 tournaments guarantees me that I've already won $9 million. 'Cause that's basically what the purse is for everything. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I feel like we had a similar conversation about a different sport, but I forget. But either way.
NBA.
NBA.
Championship. Would you rather be like role player Robert Horry and have 7 rings or all-star Charles Barkley with none?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I'd rather be JT. I'd rather have his career because he got that one major out of the way.
Right.
So like you said, if you win 7 more times or 5 more times and he has 15 tour victories in one major, that might be a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. I mean, so, didn't Bubba just win his like 10th? And like he was crying and so happy about it because he's like to win 10 on tour is so tough.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's right there. And I think Bubba's even got a better career than JT. Obviously, he's like 8 years older. But true. Bubba's got 2 majors and 10 wins or whatever it is. But if you are Brooks Koepka and you never win again, people are going to, no matter what, see you as a fluke.
Right.
People are gonna say, yeah, he has 3 majors. That's amazing. But the fact that he wasn't able to win more than one regular PGA Tour event means that those majors were – maybe it was the course setup, maybe it was the field, maybe it was he got right. lucky, whatever it is, they're going to automatically think that. JT, even if he were to get injured, never play again, 9 wins in one major, you're never going to see him as a fluke.
Yeah, so, it's a good point.
I agree with you. If he had no majors,
right.
let's say it's like 15 wins and no – like Ricky. This is like Ricky, where he has like 8 wins, 9 wins, no majors, I'd rather be Brooks.
Yeah, I would switch it then too.
Yeah.
Because one major puts you into a class of all your own, right? Like all the major winners, it's an elite group.
Exactly. Agreed. Agree to agree.
Agree to agree. We did well today. We didn't piss each other off as much as we normally do. Didn't really get into too much hot topics. So
you know why? Because we didn't talk about Tiger, you turd. And then we're both so excited that football is about to start that you can't take the grin off our faces.
However, they did set the stuff, the official whatever, for the Phil Tiger matchup.
Oh, yeah. So I was trying to look at that, but I didn't have time. Did we find out any more details?
$9 million winner take all. And they can bet, side bet, closest to the pin, longest drive. Whatever they bet goes to the other person's charity of choice.
So they can do that like on the tee box?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So they're literally like, if they step up to a par three, say, 180 par 3, Phil turns to Tiger, says, 10 grand closest to the pin. Okay. Whoever puts it closer, the other guy's got to pay the 10 grand to the other person's charity.
I can't handle this. That's too much.
That's pretty cool. I think that's freaking awesome.
Like, this is watching Phil and Tiger play like we play.
I know, but way better.
But, yeah, but the two of the 5 best golfers of all time.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
And both from the Pac-12. Even better. Like, this just segues right into our podcast. It's unbelievable.
I can't even handle it.
Sometimes life gives you little gifts. This is one of them.
Do we know what day it's going to be on? Is it going to be on Saturday? It's
Thanksgiving weekend. I don't know if they've announced the day yet. Hopefully Saturday.
Well, I'm driving back from Thanksgiving Saturday, so if it's Saturday morning.
You better hurry. You better leave early.
I'm leaving at 3 a.m. I am not missing a single shot of that. I can't. I just can't. This is once in a lifetime.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the official date yet, but it is Thanksgiving weekend, one of those days.
Dude, if it wasn't Thanksgiving weekend, I swear we would drive to Vegas and watch.
I would go. Heck yeah.
Vegas is an easy drive for both of us.
Yeah, it's only like, what, 4 hours from me? Probably 4 from you, too?
Yeah, 4.5 from me.
Yeah.
Although, that would be brutal because most golf tournaments, people are spread out.
Oh, true.
In this golf tournament, it's like everybody, same group.
Yeah.
All the time. There's no other groups.
Oh, man. Well, this has been good. This has been a good one. One more podcast before football starts.
And we're going to the USC UNLV game together.
And we are. Yeah, that's right. Opening weekend. Ooh, that is going to be fun. God, it's going to be good. And you know what I'm really excited about for when football starts? We get to do our Big Boy Pants Awards again.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, we haven't done those in a long time. Ah, it's going to be so fun. We just both have shit-eating grins on our faces right now.
It's amazing.
Oh, well, good. Kyle, we'll do the same damn thing next week.
All right, man. Can't wait.
All right, see ya.
to get down. I'm not internationally known, but I'm known to rock the microphone.